give us like a thumbs up or something, let us know that the audio is still good on your end, but cool.
Wow, your internet connection is very good because it's like completely in sync on my
Oh, really? Awesome. But yeah, so anybody that might be watching this, if you have a question or you have a comment or something like that, we'll keep looking over and see what's going on. I've got a camera over my the back of my left shoulder as well, kind of capturing what we're doing here. So my plan for this is to make some YouTube content and some other stuff and
awesome,
all together. So yeah. Anyway, well, I appreciate you coming on here and kind
Thanks
of
for having it.
Yeah, of
Thank
course.
You. Yeah.
Well, it's man, this is always kind of funny because, like, I haven't met you in person yet. I haven't met Cameron in person yet, which is hilarious. I haven't met Drew Tucker in person. Like, there's so many people that I just know from being on social.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, there's something to that, I think.
I've got some echoing. Hold on.
Uh-oh.
Thanks. I don't know how to fix this.
Maybe need headphones.
Maybe I do need headphones. Maybe I need to do...
You got speakers going, but Instagram should be coming through your phone.
Okay, hold on. I know what it means.
Right.
Sorry.
We'll figure it out.
I'm not prepared for this at all.
We are 12 hours apart, so we're trying to figure this
out. Apart.
This is like the magic of the internet.
I'm going to forego my dignity and use some Audio Technica ADH M50s. Hold on a second.
We're on the same page.
Really?
The same guys perfect. On. Yep.
Perfect. Okay,
wow, that echo. Yep. Sorry.
I'm so sorry. Thanks for the... I know, the dartboard's great, isn't it? Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I think we're
is
good.
Is this better?
Let us know if this is better.
Sorry. Thank you. Thanks, guys. Okay.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Cool. So
cool, man.
I think this is part of it, right? Like the magic of the internet lets people gather together from Australia to Kentucky in the United States. So it's kind of neat.
Yeah, this is fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So just, you know, for the two people on my feed that may not know who you are, do you want to give us like a little origin story about who Adam Tan is and what
you do? Yeah, sure. I am from Australia, and I make videos about percussion. There is a dartboard behind me. And I make videos about percussion on a show called The Studio. It's just stuff about whatever I can find. Like, I'm doing a mallet review today, Mallotech Eric Samri, if anyone's wondering. And I do, like, DIY tutorials. I do, like, technique stuff, whatever I can do. Obviously, I'm not an expert or anything, but I think that sort of makes it a bit more realistic, you know, like the grassroots level sort of thing. And, yeah, I don't get paid, like, a big amount to do it or anything. Like, it's not my full-time job yet. I hope it can be. But my main goal is to help people and to just make the community feel a bit closer. And like what Brandon's doing as well, it's like, everyone is closer because there's more platforms for us to deliver on. So yeah, that's what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. What was I going to ask you? So like the studio family thing, like what is, well, the studio, like where did that come from? Why did you feel the need to do that?
Basically, like I've been making videos on YouTube for like something close to 10 years, maybe 10 years or so. Since I was in high school until now. And it was only recently, I think 2016 was when I started the show, and I'd just gone to my first international event, Chosen Veil International Percussion Seminar. And that was fun. And I'd never seen percussion outside of Australia before. And then a lot of people in Australia can't afford to fly to America because it's ages away. You guys are very far, unfortunately. So I was thinking there's a lot of people like me who can't afford to like go on all these like expensive flights and whatever. So I wanted to make something with my YouTube skills that could help people, as well as getting like people closer together. Cause I can like edit videos quickly. You know, I can like use all these social media things. Back then, you know, social media was still kind of like a new thing, but I was just trying to see what I could do. So yeah, that's why I started the show. The name actually came to me like in the car one day. I was driving. I was like, well, I have a studio now. I basically rush bought my marimba and my studio. And I was just like, let's just call it The Studio. Great.
Sweet. So it only makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
So who are some of the people, like, who would you describe are the people that watch your show?
Well, at the moment, the demographic says it's majority United States. That's to be expected, because not only is the US the number one YouTube consumer in the world, well, not for long. India is coming, but number one. And secondly, like, percussion is huge in the US, so that's not difficult to expect. The age demographic is between, I think it's like 13 to 20 is like the biggest amount. So people that are close to my age on the top end, and then, but I get people from all kinds of ages, which is really nice. Like, it's really nice to see people not discriminating on, like, right, age or anything like that.
Have you ever been reached out to by, like, high school and college teachers for any reason? I'm just curious.
For what purpose? What purpose?
Well, you know, so how long did you say you've been doing the show?
Now is about 2 years. Yeah.
So, you know, give it maybe two more years, and some of those people that were in high school are obviously going to be in college. People that were in college may be paying attention are going to be professionals. So those people are going to have been aware of you. And they're going to, I don't know, I imagine this is going to start skewing a little bit older because they know about you, you know? Yeah. So I'm just wondering, like, where you are in that process. As people that know about you get older, have you started to do things with the older crowd?
Yeah, kind of. I kind of experienced that at Mallet Lab when I saw, like, Amanda. I met Amanda, who was like an older person, who's a professor, but she's like, you know, she's doing the right thing and sort of going down to the level of young people and just, you know, us being the same, right? We're all the same. We're all playing, you know, percussion and whatever. And I always thought, you know, as people who watch my show get older, maybe they can start to take over my role that maybe I had in, like, their younger years and pass on the same sort of knowledge to their students and things like that. And wherever I go, I don't really mind so much, as long as, you know, I have people to help. Right. Otherwise, yeah. It's just about sharing content to whoever wants to watch it.
Absolutely. I think it's great. I think it's a lot of fun to sit and watch somebody talk about the things that we don't usually talk about in social media, because most people just want to show, like, here's a picture of me teaching, here's a video of me playing something.
Yeah, here's a camera.
They're not really like, not getting in the meat and potatoes of, like, the nerd things that we like to talk about, you know?
That's right.
I think that you fill that void nicely, which I think is great. What's some of the feedback that you get from your audience about, say, like, you're going to do the Samut review today? Like, what do people say to you in person about these reviews? Do they find them valuable? I would imagine they do if they keep doing them.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I found that apart from, you know, like, if you went onto your local shops, shop page and you looked at the reviews for each product, like Steve Weiss or whatever, and it says, "This fellow is 5 stars, read it because of this, this, and this." Apart from that, it was very hard to tell what people thought of mallets. And actually, mallet choice is like an integral part of percussion. Mm-hmm. So that was why I started, because firstly, like, I didn't know that much about technical stuff at the beginning. I still don't think I'm like a professional in the sense of, you know, like people who are like virtuosos or whatever who tour regularly. Like, I don't put myself in that league. Anyway, there's not even close. So it's more, that's why I started on mallet reviews, because mallets are more like an objective sort of thing. It's kind of like, this is what it is. It's of this weight. It does this sound. And I wanted to sort of help people on this sort of like level playing field, instead of being like, guys, I've just graduated my master's degree. I know everything. Everyone listen to me. Like, no, that's not what it is at all. So people say like, oh, it's good to know what mallets sound like before you buy them. I mean, we do the same with cars and firing and things like that. I don't know why we don't do it with mallets. And now I see a lot more people are doing this sort of stuff now. My friend Daniel Asghari, I don't know if you know him, but he does some washing videos.
I have to check him out.
Okay. He's awesome. I don't know if he's watching, but shout out to him. And yeah, just, I like the idea of us sharing what we know so that, like, it might help someone and you don't expect it. Yeah,
for sure. You know, one thing in the US, now I don't know, maybe I'm overgeneralizing, but it seems like things like what you're doing as far as the YouTube thing is maybe too commercial for some people. You know, like, we put our art on a pedestal and we think like, well, what we're doing here is art. It's not commerce. It's not this commercialized thing. What do you say to people that think that?
It's good. Yeah, it's a good point. Because like a lot of people think, well, this is, it goes back to the argument of, you know, when you study music, what is the job, right? It's like, is it, you're going to be a teacher all the time, which is great. Uh-huh. Or like maybe you're going to be an orchestral performer. And, you know, nowadays we have the internet. I feel like we have a lot more options to explore, like, you know, income streams and things like that. I think it's good to not limit people's expectations of what you can do with music. And I think what you're doing, you know, like promoting social media as a whole, and you know what people like Cameron does things like this too. You know, like he performs and then he also promotes performing. Shout out to you, Cameron. And I just think that's great because it's much better to like use what you have. Like we have all these really nice e-commerce tools that anyone can use. I don't even have web design knowledge, but I opened my own store and I like, you know, learned how to use Patreon and PayPal and all those things.
Right.
But yeah, why not? Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have this problem right now with so many people graduating with degrees that we've flooded the job markets and everything with people that are qualified on paper to do it. So, you know, whenever you have so few positions available, but so many people available to do them.
Yes.
It only makes sense to me that like the internet would be a place for some of those people to go and explore a different audience. You know, it's like,
yes,
to teach, you don't have to be at an institution anymore. I mean, look at what MATLAB is, look at what you're doing, look at Mark Pratt and the Grid Book series.
Absolutely.
Sorry if I'm forgetting some big people here, but you know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah,
this is teaching now. I mean, I've done Skype clinics from my living room for like 2.5 years, sitting in my living room at home in Kentucky, on the internet, on a laptop, talking to somebody in Texas, studio, or even a whole school of music, you know? And it's like,
what is it about, man?
Yeah. You know, nobody here has money. Like schools don't fly you out and pay you to be there. You don't have like most people don't have money, just fly around the world a billion times a year to go do things. Like,
absolutely.
Why not use the tools that we have and the resources? And I don't know. For me, that seems to be a pretty old school mindset of like, no, we teach in a classroom, you get a job and you go teach there, or you go play on a stage. You know, one thing I've been even thinking about recently is like, I think it would be really hip if somebody would actually plan a performance specifically for an internet audience. You know, we do this thing right now where it's like the primary audience is on or in the audience and you're on a stage. And then it's secondary, like there just happens to be a camera over here. But I think it would be really interesting if somebody would just make a performance specifically for the internet with maybe nobody live.
In Australia, there's actually a lot of, you know, younger orchestras that are doing live stream only performances, right? Like they're just only streaming. So they just use like YouTube or Instagram Live, or they might use like their own website and have like a chat box, and then people buy like a pass, like a ticket to be able to see it, kind of like pay-per-view sort of thing. But it works. Like people want to watch it because, you know, how often can you watch a concert from the comfort of your living room? And I don't know why percussionists don't do it more often. Maybe it's just the fear of not having as many people or something, or just like having a real life audience is there. But I feel like because the technology is so readily accessible, everyone has phones now. Instagram Live is super easy to use now. Like even I know how to use it. I've never done my own Instagram Live actually. Facts. Like I've never tried it.
You know, it's interesting, right? Like we talk about contemporary music, classical music, whatever, audiences are dwindling and orchestras are dying and like whatever all these stories are. So if those are the stories that are happening, why wouldn't you use the resources to go find your audience? You know, rather than make them come to you or like, okay, I'm in Lexington, Kentucky right now. Instead of doing a recital and saying, okay, I'm going to do this Xenakis and all this like high art music and think that I'm going to attract 200 people, I think is kind of ludicrous at this point. You know, it's like, why wouldn't you do it? The Xenakis kind of crowd is going to be scattered around the world. So why not get 500 people from the internet, you know, other than maybe five that show up in person? Because
much bigger gap.
But I feel like there's still this stigma of like, this is something commercial. I don't know if it's really like that it's unknown. I mean, Facebook's been around since 2004, really. It's been open since 2006. I joined in 2005 when it was still only college students, and you had to invite high school students to be on it. Anyway, so like, you know, it's funny. Every time I go on Facebook, I see somebody else where I'm like, from the older crowd, like the very older crowd. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe that they're posting a selfie right now, or they're live right now on Facebook. Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, so maybe the argument of like, well, this is just too new is kind of ludicrous. You know, everybody's aware of this stuff. It's been around for at least 10 years. So, I think it's, well, anyway, I think it's great that you're on board and you're early, because anybody that's early is setting themselves up for a future of the long term of success.
It's true.
I think the biggest thing doing this shortly.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that they like deters a lot of people from doing, you know, like posting things is obviously the self-consciousness of, you know, putting yourself out there, because it seems like such a crime or whatever to, you know, be proud of your performance these days. It's like, oh, you know, this person is very arrogant because they're putting their performances up on the internet. But I don't know why that's the case. I mean, I feel like it's the same as when you hand your resume to your employer. I mean, like, you're showing them your skills. Does that mean you're arrogant? No, it means you're showing what you've done, what you've achieved. And, you know, when we play music, we want to do it to like help people, not to help people necessarily strictly, but also like share your music with
just
people.
Share, right?
To like play music for people. And it seems kind of counterintuitive to be like, I don't want to show anyone. Just that's in the history books. It's all good. Like if I show people this video, I'm an asshole. Like,
isn't it arrogance to stand on a stage and play? So why would that be any more arrogant to turn the camera on?
I mean, yeah, exactly. I just think it doesn't matter.
You know, I mean, like if you think it's an arrogance thing, then wouldn't that be the same? Like you're standing in front of the crowd looking at you.
When I started this show, a lot of people told me, I mean, people still tell me this now, which is fine. Like, this is totally opinion. But people used to tell me, like, why do you want to make a show about percussion? Why do you think you're some sort of god of percussion? I said, no, I just want to make some videos about just normal stuff that we talk about in daily conversation anyway, right?
Yeah.
And people just don't like that, right? And that's fine. Like, some people like to be, you know, more restrictive with their show, which I think is totally normal. But when you start telling people who are sharing content, you are being too out there, you are just putting yourself out too often, then you say to them, well, how do people get opportunities? How do people get concerts and gigs around the world? How do they get to do all these things if all they do is
my head in their room? Like, not enough here.
Right. Like, what are you supposed to do then? Just sit in your room, lock yourself up, and just pray to the marimba and hope that something happens. No, come on, man.
Dude, but you're so on it. You know, there's two things about it. It's about attention, first of all, and not in a narcissistic way, but in a value prop kind of way. Like, you're a performing artist. You have something to provide people, which is entertainment or escapism or storytelling through music or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And why not? You know, you get into it to share. Like you said, most people get into this to share an emotion or a story or whatever it is. So, you know, you would think that you would want to share that with as many people as possible.
Exactly.
So totally a way to do it. And something that I think would be valuable, hey to everybody that's on Instagram Live right now, Richard Henson, I see you. I see a ton of people on here. This is great. If anybody has a question, by the way, we're just kind of going off on philosophy at the moment, but maybe we'll get more tactical right now. So I was going to say, for you or anybody watching or somebody that watches this later, that mindset of trying to shut people down and tell them like, no, you need to shut up because you're nobody, I think is ludicrous and ridiculous. And everything else on planet Earth is moving away from a top-down mentality. So if you think about it, television is going to OTT or over the top, meaning platforms that are built on top of other platforms, something like Netflix, Hulu, Sling TV, you know, whatever's in Australia that might be a version of this. You know, back in the day, you used to have five networks. It would be five people at the top that would determine what was going to be on their channel that day and in what order. And basically, as a consumer, you were told, well, you're either going to watch this or you're not going to watch anything. And you didn't get a choice. But now, of course, everything's moving towards choice.
Yeah.
So, as far as that goes, I think that relates to us as far as like sharing our perspective. you know, no longer is it like you have to play the game and be a full-time professor for 40 years. Oh, and then you can open your mouth.
Mm, yeah.
But now it's anybody, if you're 13 years old, 18 years old, if you're going to go into college, if you're already in college, if you're just out, if you've been a tenured professor, every state or every point in your career, I think, is viable to go on the internet and talk. And it's not like Adam Tan is going on the studio and making videos like, all right, everybody can quit paying all these overpriced schools. You can just watch my videos and here I am. Like, that's not where you're coming from. It's, this is my perspective of what's going on. You know, and it's like, everybody has their perspective. I don't know the people that are all watching right now, but a high school student has the same level of viability on the internet as somebody that is about to retire and is in the Hall of Fame of PAS, in my opinion. Correct. Because the high school student has a perspective of a high school student. They have their own thoughts and concerns and feelings and perspective of where they're about to go in an industry. And they could share that with everybody. I think older people would learn something on how to better teach that student. I think the colleagues of that student would learn about their friend, and they would be able to share and, you know, communicate about those joint problems. You know what I mean? Like, if you have a thought, most likely somebody else has that thought. I think a tenured professor should be out there making content about their perspective of what it's been like over the past 2 decades, 3, 4 decades, whatever it is. Share that perspective. Now a student better understands where they're coming from in the whole lineage of their mindset, you know? So I don't think you're going out there and doing anything malicious, sharing your perspective. I don't think I don't think Mark Perrette is. I think everybody's doing a great job. Everybody should speak up. And I'm waiting for the day that college professors are doing the service that you are right now. I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be like 5 years.
I think so too. I think it's also important to not mistake people who, you know, like a lot of people say, oh, you want everyone to talk on the same platform. Then you're basically rejecting, you know, the years of experience this person has, or you're rejecting all kinds of criticism. I think that's just wrong. I think when you're putting yourself out there, and, you know, obviously you guys have an amendment in your constitution that says you have freedom of speech. But I always say this, I say, not only do we have freedom of speech, but people are free to criticize us, right? And we're free to criticize them too. So it's kind of like a two-way exchange. But the moment people start to say, it's only one way because I'm older than you, or it's only one way because I come from this school or whatever, that's when things start to get crazy, right? Because then you're essentially telling the other person, no, you can't say anything because I said so, right?
Isn't it funny that we're in this industry where we're like, well, everybody's opinion is valued because it's art and it's subjective and it means whatever it is for you. But then like we draw these lines in the sand because
it's very ancient, you know, and it's very like for me to do that would be like if I turned off my comment section, block my ratings, and I deleted any negative thing ever. But I've actually always kept all my negative comments there. You know, sometimes they're really lowbrow things like, oh, you're an Asian or whatever. And sometimes they are valuable things. And I keep them all there because I think it's what keeps you accountable. I think everyone needs to be kept accountable. It doesn't matter who you are. Like you said, right? 13-year-old kid, maybe the teacher is the one accountable. Maybe his friends are keeping him accountable. But someone who's like a professor, you know, maybe they say something wrong. We experienced a few of these, what do you call it? I don't know the term for it, maybe like scandals. I won't name any names, but this year, you know, like a few things happened with a few people who said a few things, and people will keep them accountable. But then there'd also be people who'd say, oh, you can't criticize this person because he or she has so much published work and they are very famous and this is like, that doesn't matter, you know, anyone can criticize these people because they are people too. So I think that's just the main thing. It's just don't be afraid of, you know, criticism or whatever, because you can give it too and they can give it to you. And it doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means, you know, you have things to look at. Maybe you don't have things to look at.
Yep. Yeah. Hey, and real quick, anybody that's on Instagram Live, if you happen to have a question for Adam,
ask away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thumbs up to you too.
And by the way, I figure I might as well say something about who I am, because there are some names on here that I don't know. So I imagine they're coming in from your end.
Dr. Brandon Ovid.
Yeah.
Doctor, get it straight.
Yeah. Damn it. I spent 11 years in college, which is a long time. It feels like I don't remember hardly any of it, which is weird, I guess, because most of it was in a practice room. I got an undergrad in music education from the University of South Carolina, master's in music performance, Colorado State, and then a doctor of musical arts from the University of Kentucky here in Lexington, where I still live. I was a member of the Carolina Crown Drumming Bugle Corps here in the U.S., where I played timpani for 2 years in 2006-2008.
Awesome.
I taught some drum corps at the battalion out in Salt Lake City, Utah. I write music, teach music, taught high school drum lines and percussion sections and college stuff. I've been a college professor. I teach a youth orchestra program here in Lexington, which is the third oldest one in the country. We're going to be
17
years old this year, which is great. We got about 450 kids in there, which is crazy. Yeah. And then playing the local regional orchestra, the Lexington Philharmonic, alongside people like Jim Campbell and Brian Mason, for anybody that keeps up with the percussion world, which is probably everybody here. Yeah, so I'm fortunate to play along with them because they're great colleagues and great players. So, right now what I'm really into is the digital marketing thing. I equate marketing to teaching. You know, for a while I was like, how did I even get into this? And, I'm doing stuff for retail brands that are going like B2C, direct to consumers, or B2B, where we're going to wholesalers, where I represent kind of ghost in the background behind some music brands and individuals. I do a lot of consultation on how to do stuff for certain people. So it's a good time. But yeah, I think of this marketing thing as teaching. You know, whenever you're teaching, you're trying to get somebody that doesn't know what they're doing, that, you know, has little experience with what you're talking about at the moment, trying to get them to do it, you know, at a simpler level, you're trying to get somebody to do a thing. And it's the same in marketing. You're trying to get somebody to do a thing. Maybe it's buy your service or your product or whatever it is. So I think of it as the same. I'm really into psychology as far as like the music part goes, the education part, trying to put myself in the shoes of a student. You know, you think like, okay, well, I've been teaching for, I don't even know, gonna be 31 in like a week. So whatever that is, 17 years, something like that, that wow. I've been teaching. So that's a long time of like doing your own thing, being in your own mind of how you do stuff. And so it can become difficult even as you get older, to remember where you came from. Like, how did I get to where I am? So always kind of stepping back and trying to put myself back in those beginner fundamental shoes is kind of fun, you know, the psychology of that. So
absolutely.
Anyway, that's kind of what I do right now for anybody that cares. So my goal is basically to turn a media company in not just to something that represents retail brands and doing digital and social marketing, but to also do it for the music world and to be kind of a leader in sharing how people that aren't doing this yet can do it. Talk about what the benefits of doing it are, you know, like what's the purpose of this?
Yes.
You know, sometimes I think I'm a little early in it. Other times I'm like, well, Adam's out there and Mark and Drew and Cameron and all these people. I don't think it's early. It's early, but it's not too early. You know what I mean? Because I think if it's too early and you have to say and explain like why you're important, then I don't think you should be doing it.
I don't think it's mainstream just yet, but I think we're getting there. I think it's a good time to get in.
So what would you say? What would you tell people? Like, what's the point of going on social media?
Oh, just to be proud of your achievements, just to share what you've done with people, just to see what other people have done. You see, it's much easier to connect with people when you have something to show for yourself too, right? It's like when you rock up to a job interview or whatever, you don't rock up empty-handed. Or when you meet someone for the first time and you share what your interests are, whatever, you say nothing, then it's kind of like, well, there's nothing to talk about. But, you know, when we go to like things like conventions or like, you know, days of percussion or whatever, and you meet, you know, fellow percussionists and they want to see what you've been doing. And if there's nothing to show, well, it's just very difficult, right? Right. A lot of my things, like, for example, you know, Mail It Lab only happened because I organized this event over the internet over 2 weeks before, just 2 weeks before PASIC, I organized this panel. And then I met Drew. Before that, I'd never met Drew before. Great guy. Has a killer muscle structure. And he's a great guy. And I didn't know that. I didn't meet him. But because he had a profile, you know, and I had a profile, and we just sort of, like, talked, and things happen, right? Things happen if you have, like-minded interests or whatever. But people don't know that if you have nothing there.
Like, that's the thing that's difficult, right? Like, geography oftentimes will limit you, especially if you're in Australia and there's, you know, nobody.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, we're like 27 hours away from you guys. You know that? Like, so far. And, like, honestly, in Perth, like, if I ask people to name another percussionist in Perth, it's quite difficult, right? Because, like, not many people promote themselves. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to encourage people to do it. But, yeah, things take time, right? And, like, we can't say to people, you must have an Instagram with 1,000 followers or whatever by the end of the year. Like, it's not going to happen overnight, but I think we're going in the right direction.
Oh, you know, I just thought of something. We were talking earlier about how some people put down the use of social media and why this is not maybe a good thing to do, or how it cheapens the art. And it's like, these same people are the same ones that go on Facebook and they'll be like, hey, I'm putting together this new consortium with this composer. If you want to be part of it, let me know. It's like, you understand that you just use social media to get people on your consortium, right? Like, that thing that you talk crap about, you're actually doing. So I don't know what to say about that. Yeah. I think so many times that we're blind to our own actions. You know, we just lack that self-awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, people need to understand that if you want, like, okay, this is the same thing that I get with a lot of people who do, like, GoFundMes for marimbas and things like that. It's basically, like, you want some people to, like, give you something, you got to offer something first. And I think always this is, like, a general life principle anyway, but it applies double as much in social media, because these days anyone can have, you know, 10 million followers or whatever. Anyone can have, like, fake accounts. Anyone can do any of that. But if you can actually give something to people, they will give you something back. Right. Like, for example, when I started my show, and I hate to use myself as an example, but, like, when I started my show, I didn't have any reason to start it. No one said you must start it. No one was paying me anything. Remember one when they sent me all those mallets, like, they didn't pay me anything for it. They were the first company to send me things, right? And I just like, whatever. I was just like, I'm just going to make these videos because it's enjoyable. And I think, especially, you know, when you see people like, you know, Logan Paul, Jake Paul, whatever, like, on YouTube, and it's like, oh, these guys are so famous and they have a big house. I can do that too in 1 week. Just watch me. I'm going to make videos every day and I'm going to be world famous.
I'm funny enough. No. Right? Yeah. No.
No. Yeah. You see, you're not offering people anything and you're expecting so much in return. So it's the same with anything. I reckon if you're not sure, you know, just start with, I say this to everyone, just start with posting videos of your performances. That's the easiest one to do, because you should be recording yourself anyway, right? And then just post it. Who cares if people say, oh, your playing sucks? Like, their playing probably sucks too, but you just don't know why.
So let's go down the rabbit hole real quick. So, you know, I have some friends that reach out to me and they're like, I'm really interested in this social media thing, but I haven't quite wrapped my mind around, like, why to do this. I'm an orchestral player, so it's not like I'm out giving recitals all the time to show. What can I do? And it's, you know, we talked about the word perspective earlier. And I think because the orchestra world is so traditional and backward looking that maybe it looks offensive to go on social media and just talk about your perspective and, like, your ideas behind stuff. But I think this is where you start, is, like you said, post videos of you playing. If you're an orchestral person and you're in the practice room and you're playing, I don't know, Harry Onis or something like that. Yeah. Play the lick, and maybe you look at the camera and you talk about, like, this is why I chose these mallets, because for me, it gives me this kind of tone quality or this rebound off the bar.
Exactly.
It feels a certain way, or I'm trying to match with, you know, these instruments in the orchestra. You know, here's my alternative. Like, if I don't have these mallets, I would suggest maybe using something like this. This would be that upfront value of just sharing your perspective, because a viewer would watch that. And it's not like you're trying to be the end all be all.
Yes.
But it's like, well, here's what works for me. I don't know. Maybe it'll work for you. Watch my video. Maybe I can inspire you to try something new and different. Maybe you try it and it works. Maybe you try it and it doesn't. Anyway, it's just the value being your perspective and just another thought
And someone might challenge you too. Like someone might say, you're so wrong. You know, like this person said in this book, you must use this. And that's fine because it might give you something to think about. It might give other people something to think about. And then like a dialogue is created. It's not, yeah. Suddenly it's not like I'm standing on the podium. Everyone, please bow down to my feet in 30 seconds. Like, it's not like that at all. So yeah.
I think, yeah. I think it's interesting too. You were talking about.
Hey, Rob. Sorry, Rob Melba, everybody.
Hey, Rob. How's it going, man?
Just did your video.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. So like you were talking about brands reaching out to you, giving you mallets. You know, I'm kind of curious if it actually works just like a traditional influencer kind of deal, if you don't mind sharing. I don't know if you want to get into like the background.
I can tell you a couple of things. I won't say too much, but I hate using the term influencer because it implies a sort of like, I mean, I know it's like a technical term, but it always like, I used to use it myself and I hate myself for saying it now because like, it makes it sound like, you know, you hold some sort of power over easily impressionable minds, which is just not true. People can make their own minds up.
Wait, do you guys say influencer in Australia or KOL?
No, people say influencer here. It's like a general accepted term. Like every YouTube meetup I've been to, every creator space, like they say the same thing. But like, I mean, the term is just like, it's a business term, but it does sound kind of self-righteous when if I was to use it. So that's why I won't use that term. But anyway, to your question, the mallets.
It's self-righteous when you put the word influencer in your bio.
Yeah.
I always think you're an influencer, then you're not an influencer.
I said that before. I used to use that term, and I hate using it, so I'm not going to use it anymore. I'm sorry if I offended anyone who saw me using that in earlier publication material. Anyway, the mallets. So basically, when I started, people wanted to send me some mallets, like various brands, and like they just sent it to me and they say, whatever, like you can make a video or whatever. And like I make this pretty clear in my videos. I always say they're not sponsored because sponsored, and a lot of people twist this. They say, oh, they send you the mallets for free. That means it's sponsored. But sponsored implies you're getting a paid promotion and you're getting some sort of return that is like monetary usually or something greater than that. Maybe it's like, you do this and we will endorse you. And that has pretty much never happened to me ever. It's always been like, you know, we send you the mallets, you do whatever. Like I don't sign any contracts. I don't have any endorsements with people. I've been offered endorsements. I've said no to all of them because it suits what I'm looking for.
Can you say that one more time?
I don't know if say,
can you hear me?
Say what one more time?
Can you say like the last 30 seconds?
Yeah, your video's coming back. Yeah. Okay, so I was talking about how like, because like mallet, people will send me mallets and stuff, and like I'm very grateful to everyone who sends me mallets, but people always twist the term sponsored with like, oh, you're getting the mallets for free, so you must be sponsored. But no, because I don't get paid anything for them. I don't take endorsements. I never have. I've been offered a couple. I said no.
It helps you stay objective, right?
Yeah, but also, I mean, like you see, especially when I noticed about you guys in America, forgive me if I'm wrong, but like, it feels like a lot of people really want a gun for endorsements, and that's like their end goal. And I always say to them, it's like, just make sure that that endorsement actually suits your purpose. Like, don't do it just for the extra line in your CV because it restricts what you can do, right? Like, if you can only ever play on this mallet, and like, it's not like a sports endorsement. It's not like when they put, you know, like on jerseys, like big brands, you know, like, I don't know, Delta Airlines or something, right? Puts it there, and then they pay the team. They say, okay, we'll pay you this much. I love the logo there. But like in percussion, it's like you're not getting paid anything. You're just getting given, some free mallets. You get maybe like a small discount. And in return, you will forever use those mallets for the rest of your life until you end the contract. You'll forever use those mallets. You can't touch anything else in public. Otherwise, they'll sue you or something. And like, I think that's kind of weird. Like now, if it works for you, great.
Like, yeah, if it works, I mean, that's always kind of been a strange thing. First of all, I think it's funny, like, that classical music or whatever you want to call like what we do, classical music, is so backward looking and traditional. But if you look at how we've done some of our marketing, it's actually forward looking and like cutting edge because we had signature series mallets and sticks, and we've had endorsed artists way before influencers on the internet, which is literally the same thing, just in a different way.
Yes.
But I've always felt kind of weird, even as somebody that does this kind of influencer marketing on behalf of brands, it's strange to reach out to somebody and be like, hey, we want to do a thing with you. And they're like, yeah, I love your brand. I've been using it, blah, blah, blah. And then you say, cool, here's a 20% off code that you can use anytime you want to buy something. And it's like, that doesn't really gel well for me. You know, it's like,
that's right.
That I don't think there's enough value return. Like you're going to go out there and you're going to buy your products and you're going to wear it on your Instagram account for your 20,000 people and you got 20% off. Great. You know, like, I don't think that's enough.
Exactly. So that's why I'm always telling people, like, with the endorsement, just chill, man. Like, think about it first. Okay. Like, I mean, at Mail Lab, like, a lot of people, like, I asked this question on the panel. I said, like, so what do you guys think about endorsements and stuff? Well, like, I don't know. I said something about it. And, like, people were like, you know, I really want to get my first thing after I leave school is to get an Encore Mallets endorsement or something. I'm like, why? Like, why is that the first goal? Like, the first goal should just be to just play, man. Like, the mallets can always change. You know, companies change. This year we saw Mike Bolter become Big Surf, and, like, you just see things change all the time. And maybe your priorities will change. I know people who have said, I want to make a mallet series with, like, professionals. You say, I want to make a mallet series with company A. And then that changes because someone in that company is bad or something, or, like, they've changed their mind on how they want the product and the company doesn't like it. Like, changes all the time. And to say, like, I want this one and this one only is a very finite way of, you know, performance. It's weird. Like, I change mallets all the time. I have 200-something pairs now, and I, like, change all the time. I can never figure out which one I like best. And I think that's great because it's like I have an unlimited palette of stuff, right? And so does anyone else. But the moment you say, I need to do an endorsement, that's like, I only have 10 different sounds I can use from this particular series and I must wear it on my shirt.
I feel like, I think there's two things that come from it. That people don't want to do the work to be renowned.
They rely on the company.
They want to go off the equity. They want to go off the reputation of the company.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, there is just this rush to be known. I think that's just the other part.
And conversely, I think, like, you know, if it works for you, like, I know for some people, like my friend Matthew Lau, you know, he's endorsed by Marimba One and, you know, like, he performs at venues and they send, like, an instrument there. That's helpful. That works. And that's the sound you want. Fantastic. Right? But, like, that's after many years of thinking about, maybe I like this one better. Maybe I like this one better. Instead of, okay, I'm out of school. Let's go. Marimba One. Woo! And then Marimba One, maybe, I don't know. I hope it doesn't, but maybe Marimba One closes down or something, or, like, merges. What do you do then? Oh, okay. Whoops.
Right? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Hello, Defying Gravity. Defying Gravity is from Perth. Shout out to you.
Oh, hey. There's a lot of people in here. That's funny.
What was I going to say to you about that? I just have a hard time wrapping my mind around the mindset of that. You know, it's like we have people that say, well, you got to be somebody before you can talk. Social media is bad because social media is bad because it cheapens the art, except everybody's out there doing it.
It brings awareness to the art more than anything else. So I think that's...
I guess I'm just saying, like, all of these things are going against one another, you know, like,
that's right.
People are complaining that there's no, nobody in the audience and there's no money for it, but then they don't want to use social, but then they're also arguing this on Facebook and it's like, you're on Facebook. I don't understand.
It's all right. Well, that's the other thing is, like, we also have to be careful because I've done this before and I regret it. It's like sometimes we look at people's profiles, we say, oh, that person's not doing social media, blah, blah, blah. And, like, it happens, you know, like, people criticize too much and we look too much into it. So I understand if people don't want to use social media. As long as they don't tell other people who are using it, go back to, like, where you came from, go back to what you're supposed to be doing in the practice room, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's fine for us to say, like, I think, like, also nowadays, a lot of people are obsessed with numbers, you know, especially in percussion. We think, oh, it's quite a new thing, so we should quickly get as many followers as we can before everyone else. Quick, quick, quick. And they rely on things like bots and, like, you know, like for like and comment for comment. And I've always said, like, it's not about the numbers, it's about the engagement, right? Like, that's right. The first thing you learn in any social media course you take anywhere, even the free one from Google, the one that is honestly completely useless.
They have one? I had no idea they had one.
All right. Yeah, Creator Academy tells you it's about engagement, right? Because, like, people are watching the stuff and they actually care about it, as opposed to, oh, here's a bot that clicked on the title. So people got to stop caring about that so much. Like, seriously.
Yeah. I think the other thing to remember, too, is, like, people are like, well, Kylie Jenner has however million.
Yeah,
people.
Who cares?
Like, yeah, but, like, she's a personality of the world. And
yeah.
Like, what we're doing is something much more niche than that. So if you have 1,000 followers in our world, that's...
It's already quite good.
Yeah.
It's already
the percentage of your community is much higher.
I basically, you know, I started this Instagram account, The Studio Family, as an experiment to see, like, how far can organic reach go? And I started it in September. So now it's got, like, 2.7 or something. And then the average, like, for each post is, like, 500 or something, right? And I'm like... You see, like, that makes me feel a lot better than, you know, starting the account from zero and being like, okay, let's get a bot and let's bring it up to 3,000 from the beginning. I feel like that is just, you know, it's a falsehood. You know, you're lying to yourself and you're lying to other people. And it's just misguided to think the number is the goal. Because when you go up there, you want more. If you reach 10,000, you want 100,000. You want 100,000, you want 1 million. You know, like, forget about the numbers. Just... stop.
Yeah. Put that energy that you're using, focusing on numbers, into the quality of what you're doing and just be
exactly
there. And if you're not getting the followers based on what you naturally do, then they're telling you how good you are.
Yeah, then you gotta try again.
Then you gotta do something different.
Yeah, you may not succeed the first time. I mean, I had 3 YouTube channels before this one, and my vlog channel was the one before this, and, you know, it doesn't get that many views because it's vlogs. Like, everyone makes vlogs. And I started that when vlogs were still new, like 2013. That was like when vlogs was still new. And my account before that, I started in 2008. That was when people were still filming in 4, like aspect ratio 4:3, right? Like, now people are filming in 4K and all that sort of stuff. And, like, when I started this year show and I had zero, like, I started from zero. I had a few videos for my recital in 2015 and that was it. And then I started making this Marimba 1 episode. The first few comments were like, what the hell is this? Like, why are you talking about a marimba? Why are there fluid shots on a Manfrotto for a marimba? It doesn't make sense. Well, it doesn't have to make sense because I'm just trying. And then, like, I made a few, and, you know, sometimes I talk long on the videos. I'd be like, this is my review of Balance. Oh, thanks, God. But it's like really bad delivery or whatever. But you learn and you try again, right? And then the numbers didn't really, like, they weren't really there at the beginning. I got 100 views a video, maybe. And now it's like closer to, you know, between 1 to 35K. It can be whatever. So just like patience and just not being so hasty about numbers.
I think patience is a massive part of it and understanding there is a lot of testing here. You got to try things before you can have an opinion on it. Like, it doesn't make sense to never have eaten a green bean and be like, I hate green beans. Like, that's
exactly.
You got to try something.
Exactly. And then people are like, they're always thinking, they're always thinking that, you know, they make like 1 or 2 videos and then it's done. And it's like, okay, where are the views? Where are they? Where are my homies? They're not here. Your homies are not here yet. Just wait.
Yeah.
Just chill.
You got to do more.
But that's the thing. But they care more about the views than they do about making things, right? Like, I made these videos not just because I wanted to help the clashes, but because I just enjoy the process of sitting on the timeline, putting stupid like meme videos in between everything and like air horns and things like that. I enjoy that. And that's why it becomes part of my process, as opposed to, I really want to get, you know, 100K subscribers by February and I started in January. Like,
yep,
doesn't make sense. Yeah.
You know, I think there's a weird balance that you have to take into account. A lot of people will make the video that they want to make and then they assume that other people will like it. Mm-hmm. But there's also the balance of like, well, if they're not coming to you, then obviously you're going to have to do something different. You know, you're going to have to give them what they want a little bit more than what you want to give them.
Yes.
So, you know, if you're not willing to do that, well, then you're at an impasse and you got to figure that out. But like, you know, what you're doing with product reviews and all the different offerings that you have is value. You know, I could imagine that there are plenty of people at home that watch your videos and go like, I'm going to do what Adam does. And try to do the things that you do.
I would love that. But I also say, you know, it's not good to be like, I want to be like X person. It's instead you can like, you know, start with inspiration from them or whatever. Like, you know, a lot of people want to be like Casey Neistat or Gary yeah. Vee or whatever, but you should be yourself, you know, like you should be right. a good version of yourself. And if that works for people, great. If it doesn't work for people, at least you are being genuine, as opposed to being like, well, I'm going to put a camera on a monitor, on a Gorilla Pod and a microphone. Okay, I'm Casey Neistat, ladies yeah. and gentlemen.
Like, yeah.
No.
Yeah, wow. It's like, okay,
just because I hold one of these, just because I hold this doesn't mean I'm Devin Supertramp. Like, come on, man.
Please. I think it's like people see that you are able to make people happy. You're able to make a career doing the things that you're doing in totality. Like, they see everything you do and they think they have to replicate everything you do because that's how this happens. And I think, you know, for some people at home, deploying some self-awareness and saying like, okay, Adam does product reviews. He does this, he does that. I'm only good at this thing. Is that viable? Yeah, that's viable. Like, you might be the person that's like the person that does all of it. You know, that might be Adam Tan's shtick. Like, somebody else should maybe just focus on one of those elements. And then somebody else yeah. can focus on one of the other elements, if that happens to be their strength and their interest, you know? But I think yeah. forcing things down, forcing yourself to do things that you really don't know or that you're not really behind, yeah. like you're not really into it, I don't think that's worth your time, because it's going to come across to the people. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Hey, everybody. If anybody has a question or a statement, I think somebody asked you when the Simut video is going to drop.
Oh, yeah, this way. Yeah. I'm filming it ASAP because I worked a lot on the giveaway for the Studio Family giveaway. And like I do these giveaways mm-hmm. because I want to like give back to people that support. And like, they take so long to organize. So I had to like set up. I put the giveaway like up 2.5 days ago, and there's like 200 something entries now. And I'm like,
oh, wow.
One.
So, wait, so what's yeah. the giveaway? And because we probably only have like 3 minutes left on Instagram before they kick us off. Not that it
yeah.
really, I mean, we can let that hang up and then we can keep going. But
okay, well, if you haven't joined the giveaway, it's on my YouTube channel. It's the current most newest video. There's a $100 Steve Weiss music gift voucher up for grabs, which is basically anything in the store that isn't a marimba. And also all of my pieces, I'm giving away all of my pieces to one person, and it's free to enter. Of course, all you have to do is just follow the steps. Very easy. Just another way to give back to people. And I'm going to do some more giveaways soon, because yeah, I think that's important to give back to people.
That's awesome. So is that a thing? Like, did you approach Steve Weiss or did they approach you?
Ah,
just curious.
Like, full disclosure, I paid for the voucher. Like, I just
oh, wow.
it's just like, yeah, it's just to help people.
So you're like really giving value, like out of your pocket.
Yeah. It's not like I asked people to sponsor the gift. I could have, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit nicer to just give something that actually is useful, as opposed to being like, I already have endorsement of this brand, so you can only use it. Sorry.
So yeah. Have you done anything with Instagram TV? I don't think I've noticed you doing much with IGTV.
No, I'm giving it some time, you know, like I've seen this sort of same sort of, we've seen things like this, right? Like 360 video and 4K when it first came out, and then when YouTube trialed 8K and people were like, ha ha ha, no. And they're like, you know, we've seen things like this. And like, I think it's great that they're trying to do like something different, but I'm not sure my format is ready for it yet. Like, I don't know how much I can produce in vertical. I think it's important not to force jumping on the next thing that might be big. You know, like Casey Neistat made that platform Beam a few years ago.
Yeah.
And people were like, wait, get on to Beam. It's going to be the next big thing. And of course it wasn't, because like it was exactly the same as Snapchat, unfortunately. And it's just, yeah, you know, it's like you wait a bit and see whether people make it big. Because like at the end of the day, IGTV is based on Instagram. So it's still important to focus more on Instagram because it's more people.
Yeah.
And it's easier to use.
You know, so, I was listening to an interview that had Casey on it yesterday, and they were talking about Beam. And I thought that maybe it's just too early. You know, like social media right now is still all about editing and making like the perfect PR version of yourself.
Yeah. Like, so to have things that are too real time, it's just weird.
I think it just goes too starkly contrasting against like the natural behaviors
exactly
now. So I think maybe in like 10 years, they should try to bring that back. Because of course, everything's a problem, right? Like we're over here in the extreme of like, okay, we're going to PR everything. We're going to take 45 minutes or 5 hours to make our Instagram post look amazing. And then we're going to get sick of that because we've all kind of understood now, like, okay, this is all fake and lame. Like you traveled to that part of the country or that part of the world to take that one photo. This is kind of ludicrous. This isn't really your life, you know? So we're just going to go to the opposite end. It's going to be all about authenticity and being exactly who you are.
And people don't want that.
What you're doing.
People don't want authenticity. You know, you use social media to sort of escape reality. So, yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing with just, like, this. I mean, Instagram Live, I think, is one of the best things they could have done because it made live streaming a lot more accessible. YouTube Live is, like, really difficult to harness at the moment because you still got to do all that, like, you got to use the software and you got to, like, have the right camera set up. It's just very troublesome. But this is, like, very fast. Instagram, like, one button, done. Right? Facebook Live, it's kind of there. But the interactivity of Instagram Live is great. I've actually never done one. Like I said, I would like to, but I just don't know when I should do it. But yeah, because I got like some, I got a couple of, because I got a couple of big things to announce before PASIC that are huge, that I won't say yet, but it has something to do with an event. But yeah,
you know,
I'd like to live for that.
I always think of like, maybe it's a terrible word, too aggressive of a word, but like suffocating people with content. This is something that I wish I could do more of myself. Like I said, I do mostly client work at the moment, which is part of my issue. It's like I'm still trying to build a team so that I can create my own content, which is what I'm doing right here. But like for somebody like you, I would think it would totally make sense. Like if you're in the middle of creating your setup for the Samut, like you're pushing a marimba, you're setting up this light, you're putting this light up here, you're standing behind the keyboard, then you're going and looking at the recording to make sure like the stuff is right on your face. Like that whole process, I think people would love to see of you. I think that's how you, in my opinion, I think that's how you use Instagram Live, is to go deeper with the people that are really into what you're doing so that they can get even more value, not value as far as like learning something necessarily, like instructional. Yeah. But value in seeing like, this is actually what the process is. Adam really does take the time to make these things, you know, like we always see like the polished version at the end. Yeah. Everybody wants to hear the story though. You know, it's like, imagine what it would be like to have seen Keiko Abe throughout every second of her life.
Yeah.
Like absolutely. We sit here and now we want to know about Keiko Abe's life and she can kind of give us a quick autobiography and be like, well, when I was 4, this happened. When I was this age, this happened. Mm-hmm. But instead of waiting for the end to hear kind of the abridged version of her life and what she could remember, why not watch it as it's going on? Mm. You know, like show people that you're actually doing the work, show people like how you made that decision or what decision you did make. And then, you know, they go on the journey with you. And I think a lot of social media is for that purpose. So I think
I guess that's because yeah, I understand what you mean. It's because I have my vlog channel and my vlog channel has a lot of vlogs which were behind the scenes of my episodes. I've made 400 something vlogs now since 2014. And like, yeah, and what I used to do with my vlog is like, I used to just talk too much. Like I just, like went on for so long and my cutting was not ruthless enough. I always tell people like, if they want to do like editing, just be ruthless because expect the person is listening with one ear only. Because that's what people mostly do. And then you'll find the result is better as opposed to assuming they're going to be so interested in my content so I can do whatever the hell I want, which is wrong, right? Because like, so my more recent vlogs are very like snappy and whatever. My videos, as you know, my delivery is always like in your face and just quick, because shot duration is very important. And so like one thing I have a problem with live and like 360 video also is like, it's just too much empty space. I think myself, I have a personal fear. Oh, the live is off.
Yeah, we got kicked off. That's all right, though.
It's all right.
24 hours. Oh my gosh, why is my phone like absolutely screaming at me?
Yeah.
That's funny.
But yeah, I have a personal fear of like lack of curation, which is why like I've never done podcasts and I've never done things like that are like long format sort of things. I like to keep it short and quick for today's audience because it's like they're all about, you know, short bursts of things. Like you look at, yeah, Logan Paul and all those people, right? I always use Logan Paul as an example because despite all the bad things he does, he still gets attention because he's very good at marketing himself. As much as I hate to say that, much as I'd like to wash my mouth out as I say that. But like, you know, he's very good. Like his team is very good at marketing him. They have a lot of snappy things and we can learn a lot from like, not people like him, strictly speaking, but just the style, quick delivery.
Well, see, I don't know. Like, I think you're absolutely right when it comes to say an Instagram, Snapchat kind of audience. Like they want that kind of quick thing. People that are into vlogs, it kind of expect that Casey Neistat sort of quick cut thing. But you know, people that are into podcasts, I think that those are different types of people. They have a certain psychology and there's a certain expectation and behavior behind it. So like podcasts, yeah. I mean, you know, so many people are afraid to do a podcast because they think like, okay, I recorded an hour and a half video and then I have to go back and listen to all of it and then like cut out all the space and make it whatever. And it's like, anytime, have you ever heard of the show called Fresh Air on NPR, like National Public Radio? I don't know how far out NPR actually goes. It's like a like public radio in the US.
Okay.
But I know that they have like international branches and whatever. Right. Anyway, like they do interviews. And they'll bring on a celebrity and they'll talk about a movie that they were in and they'll talk about how that character was meaningful to their own life. And they get really deep, like very emotional and that kind of thing, which when it becomes emotional, there's space in the conversation because that's how conversation actually happens. There's space, there's thought, you know?
Yeah.
So podcasts, I think, you know, that mentality of conversation and the natural rhythm of it is expected, which is opposite of what happens whenever you're talking about the kind of videos you're speaking of, you know? Now, obviously you have a different kind of audience that may not be a podcast audience. They might skew a little bit young still to be like really into listening to stuff like that.
Yeah.
But as they get older, I happen to think that they might like podcasts and that kind of deal.
It's true. It's true. I mean, like, again, there is a market for podcasts, obviously, for good reason. Because people want to hear, like, you know, good intellectual conversations. But when you're on YouTube, it's quite tough because it's like every view you get is like you're grasping onto it with, like, one finger. Right? Like, they can just, they can unsubscribe anytime. And so, when you, like, I always tell people this, it's like when I see like someone's video and they upload it and they're like, you guys gotta watch my video, it's great. And then the first 30 seconds are them saying drugs and I'm very good at what I do and blah, blah, blah. And they don't actually do anything. Like nothing happens for the first 30 seconds. You've lost them. Like it's gone.
Right.
That's why like I'm always like, you gotta throw everything at them. You gotta throw the kitchen sink at them because you don't know how interested they are. Most of the time, people just don't care. I mean, the human condition is to just pay attention to a few things someone says. Like you never pay attention to the whole sentence. You might understand it after you comprehend it, like, oh, that's what they said and that's why they said all those extra things. But when you're actually watching it, you're just looking for those key things. You're like, oh, he's got a $350,000 Rolls Royce. Oh, it's there. Oh, it's there. As opposed to, oh, he's got a $350,000 Rolls Royce. Oh, he's talking about, why is he talking about? Why is he talking about the folding side mirrors? Like, you know, like things like that. So I have this thing where I'm like, you know, I just got to deliver quickly. But in saying that, I know what you mean with the breaks in conversation. So that's why I don't cut it like right to the grain, you know, where there's just no gaps at all. So like sometimes I'll leave a longer pause for effect. Maybe it's for like a meme or for like, you know, comedy or like to zoom into my face or whatever. And these are just like basic YouTube things. But like, you know, a lot of people in the early YouTube days learned all these tricks, you know, like cropping and cutting and jump cuts and whip cuts and all those things. And these days people are like, hey, we can just do one wide shot and talk the whole time. Great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but like people watch YouTube not to have, like with podcasts, they expect to hear a good conversation because it's what it is. But YouTube, they don't watch it to be like, we want to hear like the same thing that we'd hear on the street. Instead, they want to hear something that's not real, something that's really quick and really perfect. And all the talking is great. There's no ums, there's no ahs. So I've kind of engineered myself to talk like that as well. Like I always say this to Rob as well. I say, you know, when we're editing these videos, we can't just cut out all the ums and ahs. You have to talk in long chunks. You have to just literally say, we're going to start it again. hi, I'm going to do this and this and this and this, right? And there has to be no gap there, because then we can be like, that's one chunk. That's one chunk. Then it sounds like a really, you know, eloquent speaker, even though neither of us, okay, Rob is actually quite a good speaker, but I'm not that eloquent myself. So, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, how did that start? Like you and Rob doing the audition hacker stuff?
Oh, basically like Rob, well, we watched each other's videos, and this was earlier on in my development. So that was like, I think it was like February 2017. I'd only just passed 1,000 subscribers at the time. Rob had also already been on 1,000 subscribers. He was doing great, but his videos, like, they were good, but like we wanted something fresh. And then he contacted me. He messaged me like on YouTube, and we emailed and we had a Skype chat, and here we are. Yeah. Like 1 year or so later. And like, I appreciate working with him because he's doing kind of the same thing, but it's also not the same thing. Like, it's not like he's reviewing things. He's not like doing things as crazy as like my videos are always full of crazy things, but his videos are like, they're serious, but they're also, you know, have an undertone of casualness. Right. And so we've tried to like balance that very well with his videos. And it's great because then we can complement each other, you know, we show up together in the same apartment, then we can like drink coffee or whatever. And it's nice. So yeah, I like Rob. He's great.
That's awesome. I remember first seeing his stuff maybe in six, no. How long has he been doing the videos for Audition Hacker?
For 2-3 years. I think it's also around 2016 he started. Yeah.
Maybe it was like right as he was starting. Because I was just getting out of school, and I remember
it would have been quite a while ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I got out of school in May of 15, and I thought he was making videos then. Maybe it was
probably like, was. His blog has been around for ages. It's been around since 2009.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's been around for a while, and he's never sort of done it for the fame because he's never had to. And I think that's why I like working with him. I've have worked with some people, like given them some consultation or whatever, like if they wanted some help, I won't name any names, but like they would say things like, how come I haven't got this many views in this week? Whereas Rob would be like, oh, you know, we're putting out content every week, right? It's the consistency. And now he's really doing very well. His videos hit, you know, 10, 15K all the time, like easy. So
yeah. I'm just excited because I think that's kind of the beginning. You know, I think he's doing something very, very good, bringing tons of value, of course, you know, and sharing his perspective on his experience as an auditionee in a professional.
Yeah, how often do you get to hear from like a professional, right? Like someone who's in, you know, one of the revered orchestras. Like very rarely do we get someone who's up there talking to us in like a normal way, right?
Yeah.
Like a cool field. So I think it's
great. I've been trying to work with a couple of people on doing like a podcast or a video series or like whatever kind of medium it takes off to be, but people that have had some pretty big gigs in the orchestra world that have been around a little bit, they've seen some stuff, been a part of some important things, and trying to encourage them to share those stories. You know, so many people that are like Hall of Fame players that have things in their mind and things that they've seen that we all wish that we could have seen. You know, everybody's always saying like, well, I want to play like this person or I want to play like that person, but we don't really know their journey. And this is what I was talking about before. It's like, we don't know their journey, how they got there.
Yeah.
If we're lucky, they do an interview and they share it. If we're even luckier, we study with them where we actually get to speak with them. It would have been great to have seen that journey as it actually happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where I think the next step goes. But I think for those people that, you know, it's too late to like sit there and show that progression in their life, at least go on and share that, you know? I think that would be super valuable.
Brandon, I have a very good idea for you if you're up to it, because you seem to know these people quite well. I think what you should do, because I've seen people like First We Feast. I don't know if you know that channel, First We Feast, where they do this. The spicy wings challenges and things like that.
Yeah. So like two episodes. Yep.
Okay. But the point is like, if you were to get any orchestral people that you know that are great in the game and you could get them out to like a restaurant or even someone's house and you just eat with them and you record the exchange there, I think that would be fascinating as opposed to like, all right, let's make this an interview, sit down in two chairs and talk. I think like, no, if you get them in a nice, comfortable environment, it'd be great.
I think you're right. There's something funny Doug O'Connor that plays saxophone for the Pershing Zone. It's one of the military bands in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know them.
Doug and I do some work together for an organization that he's a co-founder of called Global Premier, and I'm the PR manager for them. But we've been talking about doing some things like that with some contemporary artists. And he sent me a video one time, and there's actually somebody, I forget what it's called, like composers eating popcorn, talking music, or like a play in the Seinfeld thing. But like it's literally the interviewee and the composer sharing a bucket of popcorn. They're just sitting there eating popcorn and talking about new music and contemporary.
That's exactly what it is.
Hilarious, which is exactly what you're talking about. Just a different play on that with a different crowd, I guess. But
yeah.
I think that'd be great. A lot more it's a lot more entertaining that way, right?
And it's more comfortable for the interviewer. Yeah, because a lot of the time, you know, these people are not used to having, you know, interviewees attack them with all these questions. I mean, not attack, but just like ask them questions on a like regular basis. And so you sit down with them and you eat with them. Suddenly, it's not an interview anymore. It's just like a nice meal. And then if you cut it like to the point where it's like nice, like approachable, and not too long for people as well, because I think sometimes length draws back people. And then they see their favorite person, their favorite artist, eating like they do, like in a restaurant, as opposed to in Black's, you know, nice concert hall, like behind a Deegan xylophone, like, wow, like still up there, right? As opposed to, oh, he's just like us, you know? And then that's what makes people respect you on a higher level, as opposed to, oh, it's only because their name is on the book, right?
Right.
Like Rob Knopf is like that, you know? We film our vlogs together, my vlogs in New York City, where, you know, we go to a bakery and he says, oh, that's a baguette, but it's actually pronounced big long bread. Like things like that, you know, like just normal things. Like, it's regular. Yeah,
that was great. Yeah, I gotta consider doing something like that. I think that would be a lot of fun. And obviously, like that would be a great way for me to be able to start a conversation with big time people that I kind of want to be associated with. You know, I think that's kind of a tactic for anybody else that happens to watch this footage at some other point, like. You know, if you want to know somebody, provide them value, and maybe it's like you do this kind of thing, you give them some reason to go out and want to speak with you, because it's not about you, it's about the platform that you have, you know?
That's right. So
anyway, well, hey, I got to get running.
Me too, man.
You probably have some stuff to do, like go to sleep or whatever. Actually, are you filming? Are you doing this Samut thing like right now?
I am, but yeah, I also need to eat.
What are you going to eat?
I'm going to go home and eat. After I film this, I'm going to go home.
I know you're all about some food, so.
Oh, man. I know. I've got to stop spending so much. Hey?
I thought about that one time. I was like, oh, my gosh, Adam must be doing pretty well with the studio. Because
the food?
The amount that you eat out, it's hilarious. No, that's awesome. Well, I certainly appreciate the conversation, man.
Thank you. Thank you. And I hope if you ever get the chance, I mean, we're going to probably see each other at PASIC, but if you ever get the chance, I would love for you to come to Australia or anything like that.
That would be great.
You'll be interested in this event that I'm going to announce in 3 weeks, but
let me know.
Australia.
And I was going to plug it real quick. So I'm part of the education committee for PAS, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So every year we do a panel discussion. This year's panel discussion, it was actually my topic. I'm glad that they chose it, but it was something like, I'm paraphrasing here. It's like, in 2018, is it time to revisit or rethink the way that we're teaching percussion in the college classroom? Something along those lines. And just trying to make us think a little bit, like, how can we embrace technology a little bit more? How can we think about the sort of, I don't want to say the word wasteful, but the things that are kind of clogging up our minds that maybe we don't need, you know what I mean? Like maybe not four semesters of theory or history or something, maybe only two or like whatever. So anyway, just thinking the 2018 world, soon to be 2019 college curriculum, maybe that's something that you or your viewers would be interested in going and checking out at PASIC.
When is it?
It's Thursday. I don't know the ballroom yet. I don't think they've assigned rooms, but it's, I believe it's 4 p.m. 4 p.m. Great. Thursday at PASIC. Not sure the room, so you'll have to look
at
that.
Who's on the panel?
I don't know. We're still at the point where we're like the panel people are, you know, accepting or rejecting the offer, but I've accepted, so I'm I'm happy to be part of something like that. That's actually like my first time to be on something like that. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Great.
But yeah, so I think it would be cool to have you out in the audience and kind of get your feedback at a later date about what was
said. If I can be there, I'll be there. Yeah,
that'd be awesome. Right. But cool, little plug for that. But I appreciate it. Yeah, get going.
Thank you.
Talk to you again soon.
Yeah, talk to you again soon, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. We'll see you.